and it have done much to advance us on our way. You must be scribe and write him all down, so that when the others return from their work you can give it to them. Then they shall know as we do. And so, I have written it whilst we wait their return, and Mrs. Harker has written with her typewriter all since she brought the MS to us. Chapter 26. Dr. Seward's Diary, 29th of October. This is written in the train from Varna to Galatz. Last night we all assembled a little before the time of sunset. Each of us had done his work as well he could. So far as thought and endeavour and opportunity go, we are prepared for the whole of our journey and for our work when we get to Galatz. When the usual time came round, Mrs. Harker prepared herself for her hypnotic effort, and after a longer and more strenuous effort on the part of Van Helsing than has been usually necessary, she sank into the trance. Usually she speaks on a hint, but this time the professor had to ask her questions, and to ask them pretty resolutely, before we could learn anything. At last her answer came. "I can see nothing. We are still. There are no waves lapping, but only a steady swirl of water softly running against the hawser. I can hear men's voices calling near and far, and the roll and creak of oars in the rowlocks. A gun is fired somewhere. The echo of it seems far away. There is a tramping of feet overhead, and ropes and chains are dragged along. What is this? There is a gleam of light. I can feel the air blowing upon me." Here she stopped. She had risen as if impulsively from where she lay on the sofa, and raised both her hands, palms upwards, as if lifting a weight. Van Helsing and I looked at each other with understanding. Quincy raised his eyebrows slightly and looked at her intently, whilst Harker's hand instinctively closed round the hilt of his kukri. There was a long pause. We all knew that the time when she could speak was passing, but we felt that it was useless to say anything. Suddenly she sat up, and as she opened her eyes, said sweetly, "Would none of you like a cup of tea? You must all be so tired." We would only make her happy, and so acquiesced. She bustled off to get tea. When she had gone, Van Helsing said, "You see, my friends, he is close to land. He has left his earth chest, but he has yet to get on shore. In the night he may lie hidden somewhere, but if he be not carried on shore, or if the ship do not touch it, he cannot achieve the land. In such case he can, if it be in the night, change his form and can jump or fly on shore, as he did at Whitby. But if the day come before he get on shore, then, unless he be carried, he cannot escape. And if he be carried, then the customs may discover what the box contains. Thus, in fine, if he escape not on shore tonight, or before dawn, there will be the whole day lost to him. We may then arrive in time, for if he escape not at night, we shall come on him in daytime, boxed up and at our mercy, for he dare not be his true self, awake and visible, lest he be discovered." There was no more to be said, so we waited in patience until the dawn, at which time we might learn more from Mrs. Harker. Early this morning we listened, with breathless anxiety, for her response in her trance. The hypnotic stage was even longer in coming than before, and when it came, the time remaining until full sunrise was so short that we began to despair. Van Helsing seemed to throw his whole soul into the effort. At last, in obedience to his will, she made reply, "All is dark. I hear lapping water, level with me, and some creaking as of wood on wood." She paused, and the red sun shot up. "We must wait till tonight." And so it is that we are travelling towards Galatz in an agony of expectation. We are due to arrive between 2 and 3 in the morning, but already at Bucharest we are 3 hours late, so we cannot possibly get in till well after sun-up. Thus we shall have 2 more hypnotic messages from Mrs. Harker. Either or both may possibly throw more light on what is happening. Later. Sunset has come and gone. Fortunately it came at a time when there was no distraction, for had it occurred whilst we were at a station, we might not have secured the necessary calm and isolation. Mrs. Harker yielded to the hypnotic influence even less readily than this morning. I am in fear that her power of reading the Count's sensations may die away just when we want it most. It seems to me that her imagination is beginning to work. While she has been in the trance hitherto, she has confined herself to the simplest of facts. If this goes on, it may ultimately mislead us. If I thought that the Count's power over her would die away equally with her power of knowledge, it would be a happy thought. But I am afraid that it may not be so. When she did speak, her words were enigmatical. Something is going out. I can feel it pass me like a cold wind. I can hear, far off, confused sounds, as of men talking in strange tongues, fierce falling water, and the howling of wolves. She stopped, and a shudder ran through her, increasing in intensity for a few seconds, till, at the end, she shook as though in a palsy. She said no more, even in answer to the professor's imperative questioning. When she woke from the trance, she was cold, and exhausted, and languid. But her mind was all alert. She could not remember anything, but asked what she had said. When she was told, she pondered over it deeply, for a long time, and in silence. 30th of October, 7 a.m. We are near Galatz now, and I may not have time to write later. Sunrise this morning was anxiously looked for by us all. Knowing of the increasing difficulty of procuring the hypnotic trance, Van Helsing began his passes earlier than usual. They produced no effect, however, until the regular time when she yielded with a still greater difficulty, only a minute before the sun rose. The professor lost no time in his questioning. Her answer came with equal quickness. All is dark. I hear water swirling by, level with my ears, and the creaking of wood on wood, cattle low, far off. There is another sound, a queer one like... She stopped and grew white, and whiter still. Go on, speak, I command you, said Van Helsing in an agonized voice. At the same time there was despair in his eyes, for the risen sun was reddening even Mrs. Harker's pale face. She opened her eyes, and we all started as she said, sweetly, and seemingly with the utmost concern, Oh, Professor, why ask me to do what you know I can't? I don't remember anything. Then, seeing the look of amazement on our faces, she said, turning from one to the other with a troubled look, What have I said? What have I done? I know nothing, only that I was lying here, half asleep, and I heard you say, Go on, speak, I command you. It seems so funny to hear you order me about as if I were a bad child.
Oh, Madam Mina, he said sadly, it is proof, if proof be needed, of how I love and honour you. When a word for your good, spoken more earnest than ever, can seem so strange, because it is to order her whom I am proud to obey.
The whistles are sounding. We are nearing Galatz. We are on fire with anxiety and eagerness.
Mina Harker's Journal. 30 October. Mr. Morris took me to the hotel where our rooms had been ordered by telegraph, he being the one who could best be spared, since he does not speak any foreign language. The forces were distributed much as they had been at Varna, except that Lord Godalming went to the vice-consul, as his rank might serve as an immediate guarantee of some sort to the official, we being in extreme hurry. Jonathan and the two doctors went to the shipping agent to learn particulars of the arrival of the Tsarina Catherine. Later. Lord Godalming has returned. The consul is away, and the vice-consul sick, so the routine work has been attended to by a clerk. He was very obliging and offered to do anything in his power.
Jonathan Harker's Journal. The 30th of October. At 9 o'clock, Dr. Van Helsing, Dr. Seward, and I called on Messrs. Mackenzie and Steinkopf, the agents of the London firm of Hapgood. They had received a wire from London, in answer to Lord Godalming's telegraphed request, asking them to show us any civility in their power. They were more than kind and courteous, and took us at once on board the Tsarina Catherine, which lay at anchor out in the river harbour. There was sat the captain, Donaldson by name, who told us of his voyage. He said that in all his life he had never had so favourable a run.
"Man," he said, "but it made us afeard, for we expected that we should have to pay for it with some rare piece o' ill luck, so as to keep up the average. It's no canny to run frae London to the Black Sea wi' a wind ahint ye, as though the deil himself were blowing on your sail for his ain purpose, and all the time we could no spear a thing. Gin we were nigh a ship or a port or a headland, a fog fell on us and travelled worse, till when after it had lifted and we looked out, the deil a thing could we see. We ran by Gibraltar without being able to signal, Until we came to the Dardanelles and had to wait to get our permit to pass, we never were within hail of aught. At first I inclined to slack off sail and beat about till the fog was lifted, but whiles I thought that if the Dale was minded to get us into the Black Sea quick, he was like to do it whether we would or no. If we had a quick voyage, it would be no to our miscredit with the owners, or no hurt to our traffic, and the old man, who had served his ain purpose, would be decently grateful to us for no hindering him. This mixture of simplicity and cunning of superstition and commercial reasoning aroused Van Helsing, who said, "Mine friend, that devil is more clever than he is thought by some, and he know when he meet his match." The skipper was not displeased with the compliment, and went on, "When we got past the Bosphorus, the men began to grumble. Some of them, the Romanians, came and asked me to heave overboard a big box which had been put on board by a queer-looking old man just before we had started for London. I had seen them spear at the fellow, and put out their twa fingers, when they saw him, to guard against the evil eye. Man, but the superstition of foreigners is perfectly ridiculous. I sent them about their business pretty quick, but as just after a fog closed in on us, I felt a wee bit as they did and ain't something, though I wouldn't say it was agin the big box. Well, on we went, and as the fog didn't let up for 5 days, I just let the wind carry us. For if the Dale wanted to get somewheres, well, he would fetch it up a reet. And if he didn't, well, we'd keep a sharp lookout anyway. Sure enough, we had a fair way in deep water all the time, and 2 days ago, when the morning sun came through the fog, we found ourselves just in the river opposite Galatz. The Romanians were wild, and wanted me right or wrong to take out the box and flint it in the river. I had to argue with them about it with a handspike. And when the last of them rose off the deck with his head in his hand, I had convinced them that, evil eye or no evil eye, the property and trust of my owners were better in my hands than in the river Danube. They had, mind you, taken the box on the deck ready to fling it, and as it was marked Galatz via Varna, I thought I'd let it lie till we discharged in the port, and get rid of it altogether. We didn't do much clearing that day, and had to remain the night in anchor, but in the morning, braw and early, an hour before sun-up, a man came aboard with an order, written to him from England, to receive a box marked for one Count Dracula. Sure enough, the matter was one ready to his hand. He had his papers a-reet, and glad I was to be rid of the damn thing, for I was beginning myself to feel uneasy at it. If the Dale did have any luggage aboard the ship, I'm thinking it was nane other than that same." "What was the name of the man who took it?" asked Dr. Van Helsing with restrained eagerness. "I'll be telling you quick," he answered, and stepping down to his cabin produced a receipt signed Emmanuel Hildesheim. Bergenstrasse 16 was the address. We found out that this was all the captain knew, so with thanks we came away. We found Hildesheim in his office, a Hebrew of rather the Adelphi Theatre type, with a nose like a sheep and a fez. His arguments were pointed with specie, we doing the punctuation, and with a little bargaining he told us what he knew. This turned out to be simple but important. He had received a letter from Mr. Deville of London telling him to receive, if possible before sunrise, so as to avoid customs, a box which would arrive at Galatz in the Tsarina Catherine. This he was to give in charge to a certain Petrov Skinsky, who dealt with the Slovaks who traded down the river to the port. He had been paid for his work by an English banknote, which had been duly cashed for gold at the Danube International Bank. When Skinsky had come to him, he had taken him to the ship and handed over the box, so as to save porterage. That was all he knew. We then sought for Skinsky, but were unable to find him. One of his neighbours, who did not seem to bear him any affection, said that he had gone away 2 days before. No one knew whither. This was corroborated by his landlord, who had received by messenger the key of the house, together with the rent due in English money. This had been between 10 and 11 o'clock last night. We were at a standstill again. Whilst we were talking, one came running and breathlessly gasped out that the body of Skinsky had been found inside the wall of the churchyard of St. Peter, and that the throat had been torn open as if by some wild animal. Those we had been speaking with ran off to see the horror, the women crying out, "This is the work of a Slovak!" We hurried away, lest we should have been in some way drawn into the affair and so detained. As we came home, we could arrive at no definite conclusion. We were all convinced that the box was on its way, by water, to somewhere. But where that might be, we would have to discover. With heavy hearts, we came home to the hotel to Mina.
When we met together, the first thing was to consult as to taking Mina again into our confidence. Things are getting desperate, and it is at least a chance, though a hazardous one. As a preliminary step, I was released from my promise to her.
Mina Harker's Journal, 30 October, evening. They were all so tired and worn out and dispirited that there was nothing to be done till they had some rest, so I asked them all to lie down for half an hour whilst I should enter everything up to the moment. I feel so grateful to the man who invented the Traveller's typewriter, and to Mr. Morris for getting this one for me. I should have felt quite astray doing the work if I had to write with a pen. It is all done. Poor, dear, dear Jonathan. What he must have suffered. What he must be suffering now. He lies on the sofa, hardly seeming to breathe, and his whole body appears in collapse. His brows are knit. His face is drawn with pain. Poor fellow. Maybe he is thinking, and I can see his face all wrinkled up with the concentration of his thoughts. Oh, if I could only help at all. I shall do what I can. I have asked Dr. Van Helsing, and he has got me all the papers that I have not yet seen. Whilst they are resting, I shall go over all carefully, and perhaps I may arrive at some conclusion. I shall try to follow the professor's example, and think without prejudice on the facts before me. I do believe that under God's providence I have made a discovery. I shall get the maps and look over them. I am more than ever sure that I am right. My new conclusion is ready, so I shall get our party together and read it. They can judge it. It is well to be accurate, and every minute is precious. Mina Harker's memorandum, entered in her journal. Ground of inquiry. Count Dracula's problem is to get back to his own place. A. He must be brought back by someone. This is evident, for had he power to move himself as he wished, he could go either as man, or wolf, or bat, or in some other way. He evidently fears discovery or interference in the state of helplessness in which he must be, confined as he is between dawn and sunset in his wooden box. B. How is he to be taken? Here a process of exclusions may help us. By road, by rail, by water. 1. By road. There are endless difficulties, especially in leaving a city. X. There are people, and people are curious and investigate. A hint, a surmise, a doubt as to what might be in the box would destroy him. Y. There are, or there may be, customs and octroi officers to pass. Z. His pursuers might follow. This is his greatest fear. And in order to prevent his being betrayed, he has repelled, so far as he can, even his victim, me. 2. By rail. There is no one in charge of the box. It would have to take its chance of being delayed, and delay would be fatal with enemies on the track. True, he might escape at night, but what would he be if left in a strange place with no refuge that he could fly to? This is not what he intends, and he does not mean to risk it. 3. By water. Here is the safest way in one respect, but with most danger in another. On the water he is powerless except at night. Even then he can only summon fog and storm and snow and his wolves. But were he wrecked, the living water would engulf him helpless, and he would indeed be lost. He could have the vessel drive to land, but if it were unfriendly land wherein he was not free to move, his position would still be desperate. We know from the record that he was on the water, so what we have to do is to ascertain what water.